Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And today we have Greg Beamer, Senior Software Architect for UST Global. His primary focus is on enterprise integrations, software delivery, agile practices, and microservices. Greg has been involved in software for 20 years, spent time as a graphic artist, a film professional, and even has an entry in IMDb for production assistant on The Parent Trap 2. Welcome, Greg. Why don't you tell us how you got started in the industry?
So I have a degree in film and video, which kind of explains how I ended up on a film set. Graduated with Mass Comm, film and video specialty. I got into graphic arts primarily because I enjoyed doing the design portion. And getting into technology was really kind of a factor of Al Gore inventing the internet and opening it up for commercial possibilities. So suddenly I was doing billboards on the information superhighway. And then people figured that billboards are still boring even on the information superhighway. So businesses started wanting apps, and I switched into web apps first. And about that time I met my wife, the person who became my wife, Tiffany. And I figured I better decide what I want to be when I grow up, because working as a graphic artist and as a waiter, that's not really very family friendly.
So you said you started with billboard websites and moved into apps. What were your primary languages of choice in the beginning?
In the beginning, you really didn't have a whole lot of choices. So if you actually wanted to do any sort of development, it was likely to be either C++, which I didn't have the inclination to learn, or Perl. So a lot of Perl script. Java came out shortly after that. Anybody that's been around long enough remembers a little Java guy that would you would sit here and program. That was one of your first Hello World type exercises. To me, Java wasn't really that exciting because we didn't have all the technologies to really put it together. That came a little bit later with JSPs and J2EE and pieces like that. And so I moved into ASP and started moving that direction. I quickly found that ASP led to a lot of spaghetti code, so I started actually organizing in files. And after organizing in files, I figured, okay, now you can move all this to VB and actually compile it. And early on, I figured out that you can, once they developed the transaction server or MTS, that you could actually drop a new version of a DLL provided it had the same GUID. That was a problem in VB, because if you didn't turn around after you created a GUID and put that GUID back in, it would keep creating them and it would mess up your registry, something horrible. But if you had the same GUID, you could literally go take one server out of a cluster, shut down the application, drop the new version of the DLLs, bring it back up, take the other server down and do the same thing. And of course, we've automated all that today, you know, with DevOps.
Now, you're at that conference this week, is that correct?
Yes, I'm at that conference. This time I'm speaking about DevOps. I also spoke about DevOps at CodeStock, and I've done the microservices lessons from the trenches talk. I did it last week at KCDC, or Kansas City Developers Conference. Great conference, lovely brand. I've also done that one at Music City Code, CodeMash, CodePalooza. So I've done a lot of talking about microservices.
So why don't you tell us how you got into microservices?
I started with UST in 2010. Got a call from an Indian recruiter, and I'll try to give you the short story of this one. And I have not had a good lot of luck with Indian recruiters, because in general, they're used to working in the H-1B market, and the rates are far too low for me. So I was trying to figure out how to blow him off, and he wanted me to move to Austin, and it was to work with a very large computer client that's in Austin area. So I think everybody knows who that is. It was supposed to be for 3 years. So I was looking for a figure, and I put together my salary. I put together the fact that even as a contractor, I'd gotten a huge bonus. I put together a PETA, so I, you know, for moving my family, and it was still not giving me a figure big enough. So I asked for Austin zip codes, and I think I got Michael Dell's zip code, and finally I had a big enough figure. Sent it back, and he said that's too much. And I was at the Microsoft MVP. I was MVP from 1997 to 2013, trying to get back into it because I enjoyed that touch with the actual product group. But when I landed in Nashville, I picked up my Windows phone. Yes, I had one of those. Anyway, I land and I called my wife and said, hey, how do you feel about moving to Austin? She said, why? And I said, let me forward you an email. Ordered the email. He called back all excited. Oh, we got to get you a new car and everything. So I worked with UST Global primarily at that company for 3 years, flying back and forth between Nashville and Austin, which was a pain. But as I moved out, I started getting into a lot of other clients doing integration technologies and got interested in this whole idea of microservices. And then I moved into our enterprise consulting division about 3 years ago. I moved in officially on a Friday, got a call from my boss on Friday saying, my new boss, saying, is there any way that you can be in St. Louis on Monday? And it was for a workshop on microservices. So I had 2 weekend days essentially to learn everything I could and probably screwed it up royally. Since that point in time, about a month after that, I started writing a position, an internal position paper, so I had to learn even more. And I've never been a guy that bought hype, so I wrote it in a typical contrarian type of fashion. And that got sent out to some CIOs, and that got me involved. So now I'm pretty much, as far as enterprise consulting, I'm the go-to guy. And there's only one other guy in UST that generally gets pulled into these microservices talks. So that's the genesis of Greg as a microservices expert.
Now, you mentioned that you take a contrarian approach to microservices. What do you mean by that?
So currently right now, if you look at it, microservices, and I don't know how many people are familiar with the Gartner hype curve, but you can always Google it. The Gartner hype curve, we start out with a lot of hype and everybody wants it, and it becomes a silver bullet. And as I tell people, if you don't have werewolves working in your company, don't look for silver bullets. So it gets up on the top of that hype, and everybody is, you know, this is the thing that's going to create world peace, and dogs and cats will sleep together, and cows will be swimming with dolphins. I've got a picture for that. So we see all these things coming together and all the hype, and then we realize that it really doesn't brew our tea for us and wake us up in the morning, and we go down into this slump where everybody tries to dump it. We're not there yet on microservices. And then it comes back up. And my view is we need to think of it as an architectural style, and it's a tool in our belt. We don't look at it as the hammer, and that's all we have, and then we go around looking for nails. So as I go through a lot of conferences, a lot of people are teaching the typical purist, the hype that's out there. And, you know, it's great to learn that. It's a good place to start, but I think people should question how much they really know almost all the time, because there's a lot of falsehoods about this particular technology. One of the examples that you see over and over again is the monolith versus the microservice. So how many people do you know truly are working on monoliths? Are they more likely working on tiered architectures or maybe SOA, whether it's good SOA or bad SOA, rather than a monolith? But even if they are working on a monolith and a microservice, it's not like one is hard and one is easy. One's complex and one is easy. It's just that you change the nature of the complexity. If you're talking on a monolith, the complexity is all internal because you deploy all of the code in one package. When you're talking about a microservice, you've pushed all that complexity out in between the microservices and the integration and how you put together these little microservices with your applications and make them into part of a system. there's no free lunch in here. You're going to pay one way or the other. I still believe that breaking your software down is much better, but if you've ever played a video game on your computer, that's a monolith. So monoliths are not all bad.
So what are some indicators that a microservice may or may not work for what your company is trying to do?
I think the first question we have to back up is kind of look at the journey rather than indicators for why microservices may or may not work for your company, because that gets rather complex. But instead, let's look at the journey. We've got our application today. Let's say it is truly a monolith and we want to get to microservices. What do we need to make that journey successful? Well, if you're going to break an application with a million lines of code into a bunch of applications, because I think a microservices is essentially an application that may only have 1,000 or 2,000 lines of code maximum, then you're breaking it into hundreds of services. So you need some way of delivering those services in an automated fashion. Now, where are most businesses today? They've probably got continuous integration and nothing else. So you've got to look at that automated delivery. Now, I don't like to use the DevOps word necessarily because I think it's a little bit of a BS word, at least in the connotations I've heard it. But at least understanding that automation of the software delivery pipeline. Then if you take a step even further back, you start talking about how do you view your software? And most organizations view it more as a project than a product. And there's a simple question I'll ask somebody to determine if they're really product focused, because everybody says they're product focused. The first question is, do your customers find the errors before you do? If your customers are finding the errors before you do, you're really not treating it as a product. Either that or you like delivering crappy products. Then you have the internal question. And the internal question comes down to, do you ever have cases where one team changes the contract on another team and ends up breaking their software is the first clue that they've actually broken that contract? If the answer is yes to that, you're still not product focused. And you know, then we roll back into best practices. Are you already practicing solid? Then code organization. And at some point in time, I want to start videotaping because I have a method, or it's actually a model I call CASA, which stands for Core as Application, but CASA sounds cooler. It's like Scrum. And it's essentially a model, I won't say based on clean architecture, because we came up with the idea about the same time. I was just looking at more from how to model it so you would start picturing things like domain-driven design and contract first right up front. But it's similar to clean architecture or onion architecture, that's Palermo's architecture, or even if you look up Alistair Coburn, he has the hexagonal architecture. So they're all kind of the same thing.
So are there any indicators for or against microservices for whatever your company is trying to do? But you kind of summed it up and said, well, it's a deeper question than that.
Well, let me add one thing to this. If you were to organize your code and to sit here and to organize them into kind of not necessarily functional areas, but logical areas, and I'm not talking about tiered, but you put your core functionality in one or more sets of libraries that are clearly labeled that they're your core functionality. That's where your application is. This gets into that core as application idea. Then you sit here and start thinking about writing contracts between those layers. Now, wherever those contracts are, they could be an in-process boundary, or you could add a service, and maybe even a microservice if you've broken it down even a little farther, perhaps, and you separate the UI out. Now, in today's world, we've gotten used to the idea that state, where the database, for example, that we store can be changed out relatively easily. But a lot of organizations have a hard time realizing that it's not a web app and it's not a mobile app. It's an insurance app that has a web front end and a web front end and a mobile front end. So it should be treated that way. And if organizations can get that picture, then once you have the code organization, sit here and say, okay, we really need to deliver this as a monolith because it just is going to sit on a desktop and maybe there's a few pieces that call back home when the salesman's hooked up to the internet. That's perfectly fine to deploy it as a monolith that has some way of calling home and getting to that eventual consistency state. But then you may say, hey, this is a bigger thing, and let's break it up into smaller services and release as a microservice. Well, then you add boundary conditions and you kind of break it up and you move it out into smaller independent apps. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So at least one indicator then would be if your company still thinks of the application as a web app or a mobile app, then they're thinking more project or monolith, and they're probably not ready because they don't understand what the app actually needs to be.
See, one of the things I've found is technology people like to think of things technology focused. So when we start thinking, so think about career paths. People sit here and go, okay, I'm going to be a junior developer and I'm going to be a senior developer. Then I'll move up into some sort of application architect, then solution architect, then enterprise architect. Or I can go over and I can be a BA, and then I move up into kind of a product manager, program manager. You know, eventually I'll be the CEO and you'll be the CIO, and well, I'll be happy. But the pillars is almost like the dev end is a skyscraper that's fallen into the business skyscraper, because most CIOs are not technically minded. The CTO is semi-technically minded. Enterprise architect more, you know, it depends upon the person, obviously, but your focus when you're doing enterprise architecture is not the details of how you build tables in SQL Server. That goes down lower in the level. Instead, you're trying to see how does the technology align with business.
Yeah, I've recently been on a rather large project for a rather large client. We have an aggressive timeline, so everyone is working furiously. There is a desire to move some functionality into microservices. Now, that makes some of the developers and some of the staff a little cautious. Would you advocate the planning for such a move, or is that something that you should start with, or is that something that can be moved towards?
Well, in most businesses, plan is a four-letter word, and so people don't like to say it, but I guess I'm a little cruder, and I'm more than willing to say that word. So I actually think you do have to start planning. Now, one of the ways to get your developers' feet wet, that's really easy because we see it as a separate concern, is figure out your security model and how can you wrap that in a service. You know, and maybe you make your own internal OAuth provider, and then in the future, everybody can log in with Facebook or whatever, but you don't have to go to that link. But think about what it takes to make that into a microservice, because that's very finely focused. It's focused on a capability. Now, it kind of just brings up an interesting thought to me. When I'm saying business capability, what I mean by business capability is something that the business does that can be independent and separate. And a lot of people have a problem figuring out what their business capabilities are. And I say, the first thing is think, does somebody provide that particular piece of business out in the world other than you, that you could actually purchase it? So if somebody has a product, there's plenty of security products, you can wrap them in a service. That's a capability. Now, it's not necessarily a capability of your business, because you're probably an insurance business or an e-commerce business, but even your own capabilities. If I was an e-commerce company, and I decided I did not want to maintain my own e-commerce platform, I just wanted to make money off of it, I could use Amazon or Walmart, or there's a wide variety. Now, in general, those don't break it down more like microservices, because they have too many capabilities in a single service. But there's that potential that you could find a vendor that does that. That's one of the easiest ways to start breaking up the capabilities. Or find particular function paths that have granular steps, and then start saying, does that step make sense anywhere else? Makes a perfect microservice. So if you read about microservices, you'll hear that dry is not as important. The do not repeat yourself rule is not as important, because you should be able to build a microservice in whatever technology you want. I agree with that to an extent. But part of the reason why you're developing these independent services is not to repeat yourself. So you're going to be using the service rather than using that whole piece of the software. That doesn't stop you from putting libraries that support it, but if you're doing a purist microservice, it's going to be small enough that it's essentially a small library with a service boundary.
How do you decide whether to make something a library or a service?
So the decision really is, are we at a point where we can break this off as an independent service, or do we still need to use it in process? If you're still at that point, because of not having the automated delivery of software, you still have to deliver in tiers, then you just don't add that service boundary on top of the component, and you don't figure out how to segregate out its data if you want to go to true microservices. But organize it correctly. You can choose the deployment pattern later. And in fact, in a talk that I do on microservices, I ask a question: what is the difference between a monolith and microservices in a well-architected solution? And the truth of the matter, it's the boundaries between the different pieces of software, service versus otherwise, perhaps, and the way it's deployed.
So maybe keep it as a library until you've hardened the interaction boundary a little bit, until you've isolated that piece and you know that it's working correctly, and then break it off if it's significant enough to be its own service?
That's certainly one way to look at it. The big thing is, don't be afraid to break it up into a bunch of libraries. And I need to put a caveat to that, because one of the biggest mistakes I see from client to client is these 137 project solutions in Visual Studio. They've segregated it out, which is good, but they haven't turned a product into any of those libraries that they've created. And that's where their mistake is. You're not actively developing everything. If you have a change and you're having to actively develop 100 libraries, then you have not properly separated your concerns. Because if you have to change something in more than one place, other than perhaps the boundary, because you've decided that you need to break contract, if you're making a change for a single piece of business logic in more than one place, then you're doing it wrong. And if you have, in fact, developed that business logic to a certain level, go ahead and move that out into its own solution, make it a product, release that product. An easy way in the Microsoft world is NuGet. You can make an internal repository. You can make that repository logically separated, so those having to work on the latest beta can work on the latest beta, or you can actually develop different repositories, which I actually kind of recommend that, because developers sometimes don't pay attention. And if they pull from the beta repository accidentally for a bug fix, that can cause a huge problem in production. So having people, and possibly even restricting people, I know developers hate it when I say that, but possibly restricting them from the beta repository because they're working on bug fixes.
Now back to dry and not repeating yourself. I see a lot of reuse and maybe overuse of business objects and domain models and DTOs across these, what essentially are separate systems. Is that one of the things that you would recommend against of reusing these large models and maybe breaking those into smaller deliverables that maybe don't mimic the data as it's stored?
Data storage is a storage of state. I've said in numerous talks that software is a bunch of BS, which means behavior and state. How state is stored, a database developer should be able to store it however he can best store it for his concerns, to meet his SLAs. So if he needs it where you can pull 100 objects within so many milliseconds, that's what he has to hit, and it doesn't store well the way your object model is, it shouldn't matter. Your object model is a domain model. It's based on business. And ideally, the words that businesses are using are the names of your domain objects. So when you're talking to business, and he says something about the criticality, you go, oh, yeah, we've got a criticality object. And I just pulled that off the top of my head, so it probably sounds stupid. But that's the level that you need to think about. And so you have patterns like MVVM where you bring a view model out and connect it to a view. And it's called a view model. rather than just a model. So it's not necessarily your business model. It is a user interface model. This is the way you want to represent it to the user when he's manipulating it. But it may not be efficient in your business logic to represent it that way. So there's no problem with translating as you move into different areas of your software. It just has to be purposeful.
Yeah, so maybe an authentication system has a user object that does not correspond to a user object in other parts of the system.
Certainly.
Now, you alluded to it earlier that the complexity of a complex system maybe doesn't change depending on how it's architected. If it requires a certain level of complexity, it's going to require that complexity whether it's broken up or not. And you've just moved some of the difficulty in maintaining that into orchestration and deployment path. Can you talk a little bit more about that, or do you have recommendations on how to deal with that complexity?
I use a quote from Albert Einstein in my slides and then kind of steal it and warp it, and that is that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change forms. And I say complexity can neither be created or destroyed. It can just change forms. And then I scratch out created, because developers are such creative people, they can create unnecessary complexity. But supposing we're not talking manufactured complexity, as you start to break things up, the complexity goes external. The cool thing about it is you can start managing it. So having a bunch of microservices talk to each other, you can commoditize the deployment. You can even commoditize setting up the infrastructure. And I'm not prescriptive in choices of those, but all these things start managing that complexity of getting the software out.
So what other complexity is added in utilizing microservices? Are there things that need to be taken into account that maybe don't come into play for monolithic or N-tiered architecture?
Well, for monolithic, certainly, because monolithic, you're dealing with a big rock, essentially. I mean, monolith means one rock. Your deployment pattern is pretty simple, because you know what server you're going to. Now, maybe you change it and you flip-flop servers in kind of a green, blue, or something to that effect. But you know where it's going to. When you start dealing with microservices, with each microservice, you're dealing with what's our deployment pattern. Are we going to metal? Are we going to virtuals? Are we going to containers? You can sort of do that with monolith too. It's going to be an N of one, so it's pretty simple. Then you also think about how do they interact with each other? How are they talking to each other? So that's that either API management or queuing or a little bit of both. I've seen some people internal. I just like the API management because it's one solution that solves both internal and external, but it can get a little bit more expensive. You think a lot more about boundary conditions, and you have to start thinking about contracts. If everything's one big block, and even an N-tier, as you cross the tier boundary, it's in a big block. So it's almost like multiple monoliths, if you will.
So for those interested in looking to get started with microservices, can you recommend any resources to look at specifically?
First, take Martin Fowler's treatise. Don't take those all as characteristics of microservices. They're all characteristics of the entire picture, because some of those are DevOps practices. Some of those are agile practices. I'm looking at, once I can find a little time, actually, my microservices talk from KCDC will be up on YouTube. I'm not sure exactly when. If people go to @GBWorld on Twitter, I'll tweet out when I get that video done, so people can actually see the slide deck and understand that. That may be a good way. I've got a couple of links in there to Martin Fowler's article, so you can kind of understand where it's not where this idea started. I think there was a guy back early 2000s who already started breaking down a million line monolith, and I don't know his name, unfortunately, so I can't just recite it. But I have Martin Fowler's. I use that. You can go look at that. It's easy to find that one. There's a couple of good books out there. Most of the microservices books are pamphlets. I don't mind the Pluralsight course if you just want to get a high-level picture. I don't think it takes you far enough, and I think it's it's a couple of years old and it's still very focused on all the hype that was out at that point in time. So take it with a grain of salt, but I always loved Pluralsight, great area. I may need to talk to them about a microservice, of course. So,
yeah, that'd be great. Well, Greg, do you have any other upcoming engagements that you'd like to talk about?
October, I'm switching over to more soft talk. So the topic is how to think outside of the box. And just to give kind of a preview, you can't think outside of your box. You can only expand your box and the filters that you put between your box and your subject.
Well, Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you guys for having me, and I hope we can get a chance to do this again.
Absolutely. That was Greg Beamer, Senior Architect for UST Global. His primary focus is on enterprise integrations, software delivery, and agile practices and microservices. This has been the Six Figure Developer. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt. We'll be right back.